We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
There's been no shortage of mass shooting incidents here in Chicago and across the nation, but we're going to focus on the city, where last weekend there were 7 people killed by gunfire and more than 4 dozen wounded. There are parts of the city, as Mayor Lori Lightfoot herself said last week, that are in despair. With people, mostly young men, on the streets with nothing to do, no jobs or real prospects, and with little investment from government or businesses. Well, this weekend, we're going to look at one way to address the problems head on with jobs and more. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Talk about a program we examined about a year ago and see how it's doing now. It's called Ready Chicago, and it's part of the Heartland Alliance. Ready stands for Rapid Employment and Development Initiative. And yes, they're spelling ready with an I in this case, and I had to go look up that acronym too. The idea of the Ready program is to connect people in danger of being involved in gun violence with jobs. Now, that's not as easy as it sounds, and frankly, it doesn't sound easy at all. Which brings us to Eddie Bocanegra. He's the senior director of Ready Chicago. Mr. Bocanegra has master's and bachelor's degrees in social work, and he's worked for years with community-based organizations and programs. He was part of the City of Chicago's Commission for a Safer Chicago and a board member of the Community Renewal Society. He was executive director of the YMCA of Chicago. Eddie Bocanegra, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me here, Craig.
Let's first talk about what Ready Chicago does. And I understand also that your program has reached an important milestone.
It has. We have, one of our milestones was to reach 500 men into what we call the transitional job aspect of our program, in which they take up the jobs. And we had a milestone for, we wanted to meet that goal by the end of June. And we actually accomplished that goal by the first week of May of this year, 2019.
Well, congratulations. Now, explain what Ready Chicago really is.
So Ready Chicago is an innovative response to gun violence. It's connecting people most at risk of gun violence involvement with employment in paid transitional jobs, cognitive behavior therapy, and supportive services to help them create a viable path and opportunities for a different future. And ultimately, it's to help reduce violence in our city, particularly in communities that are mostly impacted by this issue.
And you're talking about people who are at risk for being involved in gun violence. That's not just on the side of people who might be victims of it. You're also looking at people who might be prone to want to pick up a gun.
Absolutely. So there was a study just a few years ago by ICJA in which they looked at individuals that were incarcerated. And often we kind of put people who've been victims of violence in one bucket and offenders or perpetrators of violence in another bucket. But what this study has concluded that often they're the same people. So the people that we are serving in Ready Chicago, and there are stats and facts that we could support this now with even with our own participants, are actually people who have been victims of violence and in many cases are more likely to be perpetrators of violence. Many of our men, in fact, on average, our participants in our program have between 17 and 18 arrests. Four of them being felony convictions, and a little bit over 60% of the men in our program, and I mean by men, 18 and older, have done prison time. So think about that for just a minute in terms of who it is that we're serving.
Yeah, and when you think about that, the very first question is, how do you actually get people who've been that close to violence on one side or the other to be interested in an organized program with jobs?
Yeah, so there's a misconception, first and foremost, Craig, that some people believe that individuals who are the drivers of violence don't necessarily want to be included into the community or don't care for jobs. And I could tell you that originally we had a goal of 400 people into these jobs, and early on, the first 4 to 5 months, we realized that the take-up rates for individuals who were interested in these jobs far surpassed the resources that we actually had at the time. But then the other part that I wanted to share around this is that often we think that this population, who's often marginalized, are self-selecting, right, to be excluded from community. But the truth is that we, as residents, exclude them in many ways. And so the men that we're working with come to us in three different ways. And by come to us, actually, the reality is that we are going to them and we are meeting them where they're at, engaging them where they're at, and then bring them into the program. And there's kind of a threefold to it. So one way that the men come to us, or that we reach out to the men, is by what we call community referrals. So we've been able to partner with several organizations like UCAN, Longdale Christian Legal Center, the Institute for Nonviolence, Heart Alliance Outreach. And these four street-level organizations that engage people in the streets, they have enough intel to realize who is more likely to be a victim or a perpetrator of violence. Like, they see these guys very frequently running around with guns, with crowds that are more likely to be involved in violence. And so they engage them. They build a relationship with them. But on the spot, they're able to offer them a job. So historically, we would tell people, hey, you need to get out the gang or you need to put your gun down. But in reality, we never had something to give back to them, right? To kind of trade or exchange from one thing to the other. And with Ready Chicago, what's unique about it is that on that spot, that outreach worker is able to tell them, hey, I have a job for you. In fact, not only do I have a job for you, but I also recognize there's other issues that you're grappling with, like housing, for example, and substance abuse and legal services. Like, we could provide some of those resources for you. The other pathway in which individuals come to us is through our partnership with the Department of Correction, the Sheriff's Office. And so many of our men in our program are currently on parole, particularly for violent offenses. And then we also have a partnership with the Sheriff's Office in which many of our participants are also in electronic monitoring. So there's another way that people come to us. And then finally, and this is perhaps a very unique way in which we engage individuals, is that several years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, Superintendent Eddie Johnson publicly announced that he believed that between 2,000 to 5,000 individuals were the drivers of violence in our city. Well, we think of Ready Chicago as the intervention that is actually reaching out to those 2,000 to 5,000 individuals. So we use police data, hospital data, through the University of Chicago's crime lab to help identify individuals who are at the highest risk of gun involvement. And we get a picture ID pretty much of them, a profile picture. We get the last points of arrest. And then outreach really are creative in the way they use social media to find these individuals. They're kind of plain detectives. They use their social networks. They use other participants to be able to locate these individuals and find them. There's so many stories that I could share with you in terms of, like, even their reaction once we do find them as well.
And one of the things I think people who are listening to this may wonder is this not in some ways risky for the outreach people? I mean, you're literally walking into what some people would describe as war zones looking for these people.
You know, ironically, many of the people who are doing this level of work, whether it's street outreach engagement, conflict mediations, you know, individuals who are providing skill sets for this particular population, they're not necessarily always seen as first responders. But the truth is, every incident that we have, every time there's a shooting, every time there's a homicide, it is our street outreach staff that are actually there, you know, aside, along the residents of the community in trying to support the community and trying to support the victim's family or the victim himself and trying to really mitigate some of those conflicts. And I think that often that gets overlooked. And I think in part of the reason why it gets overlooked, because predominantly the people who are doing this work come from the same communities that we're serving. Often they're Black and African-American, Black and Hispanic, you know, staff. And these are individuals that a large percentage of them have been victims or offenders of violence themselves. Maybe they're individuals who've gone through the criminal justice system. And because of that, I think often society overlooks their contribution to this level of work.
Not at all. They've been getting a lot more. I mean, the people who do that kind of work have been getting more attention. But I want to bring you back to something that you offered just a moment ago, in that talk about what happens when one of your outreach workers goes up to someone who has been involved in violence and says, I got a better deal for you.
Yeah. So, Craig, I'll pull a couple vignettes. There's a gentleman in Inglewood who described he had a piece of paper with the picture ID, last points of arrest, and because our outreach is so creative, they realized one of our outreach managers, Maurice over in North Lawndale, was able to use the kiosk at the county buildings to look up the names and to see when their next court date, if they had a next court date, which most cases they do, was next and what location. So this particular individual over in Inglewood went to the court, he had this date, went there, and he's got this picture ID, he's looking around, he identifies the man, and he kind of got right behind him in one of the seats, tapped him on the side. The young man looked up and asked him, like, who are you? He's like, yeah, I've been looking for you. And of course, the young man looked at him and he said, he's like, oh man, are you the police? And he's like, no, even better. I work for Heartland Alliance. I'm an outreach worker and I have a job for you. And of course, the guy didn't really believe him and left him the information. He's like, hey, I've been looking for you for 3 months already. And so that participant has been actually with us since early February. Right. And somebody who's been consistent. Now he's still fighting his pending case. But that's the story for me that's successful, that this guy had no idea that somebody was looking for him for months. There's another case in North Lawndale where one of our supervisors there, Shanika, was going out to the community. It was an afternoon and she went to the door. She knocked. A lady comes out and she's like, who are you? And she introduces herself, introduces the program. And she's like, well, the guy you're looking for is actually not here. And shortly after, the guy did look out the window and he's like, hey, what do you want? And he's like, she introduced herself, like, my name is so-and-so. And he's like, I got a job for you. The gentleman didn't believe her, but reluctantly they let her in. And from that point on, she sold the program. And again, here's another success story for us that he was able to engage. Now, I wouldn't be able to tell you specifically where he's at with the program, but he's someone who actually started the program with us.
And let me ask the next question that I think would be in the minds of people. What kind of jobs are we talking about?
So to date, we've had a little bit over 540 participants take up the transitional job aspect of the program, with a couple hundred who just for different reasons decided not to participate in that part of the program. Every single person who starts off at Ready Chicago begin their work in with a project called community revitalization. Ultimately, what that means is that for the first few months, and it's dependent on the participant's ability to make some benchmarks, they go out to the community, they work in crews of 10, they work with the crew chief, sometimes two crew chiefs, and they are going to specific parts of the city in which city aldermen have requested some support, for example. We also work with the park district. So there's some certain parks that we will go in there and help clean up. So ultimately what they're doing is cleaning up. And while for some people it might feel, well, what's that? You know, like, it doesn't take a lot of skills. Many of our men have never had a job to begin with. So it's an opportunity for us to assess as well where they're at, where they're taking instructions, where are they at, where particular core competencies and so on. So that is the primary starting point for a lot of our participants. However, in time, depending on how many hours of cognitive behavior therapy they are able to receive or accomplish, depending on their attendance and punctuation, depending on their incident reports, right? They're able to move up to different stages. Now, there's four stages. Ultimately, the fourth stage is an opportunity for them where they're able to get from point A to point B on their own. and they're being placed in companies that potentially would be hiring them as well. So we have company partners like Freeman Seating, for example, Chicago Animal Care. There's an array of other companies that we've been working with to help not only build their competency skills, but other opportunities for employment.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. My guest is Eddie Bocanegra. He is the senior director of the Ready Chicago program. When you are working with either institutional, like the animal control people, or any corporate, Freeman Seating, which is making seating for, CTA buses, I'm thinking, and trains?
Yep.
What gets a company to the point of being comfortable enough to have someone who may not just be an ex-offender, but somebody who, you know, is pretty known to, has acknowledged that, yeah, they carried a gun or that they had been shot?
Yeah. That's a very powerful question, Craig. And I think it's one that I'm hoping your audience could really tune in to some of the facts, right? So the first and foremost, there's a misconception that people with criminal backgrounds don't want to work. In fact, there's research that supports that in many cases, the most loyal, employees. And when organizations are facing high turnovers, this is one way that you could actually cut some of that cost. 95% of those that are in prison will be released at some point, and they will be returning home. And in most cases, they'll be coming to cities like Chicago, for example, and specifically to particular communities. It typically costs Illinois taxpayers about roughly $26,000-$27,000 to incarcerate someone. And yet the return of investment is very little to none. But in some cases, not in all, but there's an estimation that about 26% of those who actually are being released from prison are actually coming back home with a specific skill, either because they might have had one already or because they were able to learn a specific trade. Again, in the state of Illinois, we're very limited what kind of trades people are actually learning in the prison system. That's an area, different conversation that we need to really think about and invest in. But people are being released from prison with some level of skills. The problem is that often those skills are obsolete with manufacturing companies and so on. So we don't necessarily tap into those resources. I could tell you right now that there is a growing interest of many corporations in our city of how to hire people with criminal backgrounds. In fact, Chase Bank, which is one of our partners, I would say they're one of our pioneers in terms of like how to bring corporations to the table to really think about how do we include them into the hiring process, into our diversity, right? Because when companies are shouting about how diverse they are, we could define diversity in many, many ways. But ultimately, if we have in the state of Illinois several million people who have felony convictions, they are part of the workforce. And so I think it's a responsibility for us to think about how do we include them. Now, luckily, there are some companies right now, like Freeman Seating, who see the interest there and see their commitment to the city in terms of reducing violence. And at the same time, thinking about the risks they're taking because they also see there's a profitable gain behind that as well, right? And so I think that the more facts that we're able to clarify and put out there, I think the more willingness that companies will be interested in doing so. And I think lastly, the other challenge around this, and this is another thing that Heartland Alliance is actually doing with an initiative called Onboard Chicago, is for companies who are interested in hiring people with backgrounds, there's a learning curve, because how you supervise and manage somebody who's done 5 years, 10 years, 20 years in prison has to be slightly different than the way you manage someone who's never been exposed to chronic violence or the prison system. And I think those are some cultural competency skills that we also need to just continue to build. And not only with corporations, but even at the government level, even in a nonprofit level, those are spaces that I would say in my profession, I see gaps in.
I've talked to there are programs that have similar goals, if not the similar style. to this one. And I talked to one out in the suburbs, and I actually got to talk to a manufacturer who pointed out that the ex-offenders that he had on his team were the ones who would come in when it was raining or snowing. And he found out one of his employees had a, you know, had like an hour and a half bus ride to get to work. And that when the bus wasn't running or didn't run when it should have, he walked.
Yeah.
And he found that out and decided, okay, I'm going to help this guy buy a car.
Yeah.
So I think some employers are starting to realize that. But like you say, there's a learning curve on both sides.
Right.
Talk about how the support services for Ready Chicago start to factor into the employee's life. And at what point does it come in, or at what point does he reach out?
Yeah. So I would say, Craig, it's kind of a twofold, right? I think through Ready Chicago, our participants, which in many cases have never had a job, and in other cases, they haven't been able to have a steady job. And a lot of times has to do with the way they manage conflict at the workspace, for example, right? Or the fact that they weren't as reliable as the employer would have wanted to. You know, like I said, you know, even in our program, we don't terminate people when they're late to our program. We don't terminate people if they miss 2 or 3 days out that week. We recognize that these individuals are still grappling with some real challenges, particularly this population, when they've been exposed to chronic trauma, chronic violence, and all the science in the world tells us that it has an impact on their brain. We're learning more about the PTSD and how we leverage what we learn about veterans with this population as well, and so on. And so I think that as we are looking at science to help inform our strategy of how to mitigate some of those challenges, we need to share those lessons learned with some of our corporate partners. But here's what I would also say. One of many ways that we help our participants is through cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. We believe that if you are able to modify some of their behaviors and address some of the root causes as to why individuals react a specific way, then therefore, coupled by some basic skill sets and competencies, they could last much longer with an employer.
Can you give me an example? I mean, what kind of behavior would cognitive behavior therapy work to change?
Well, let me give you a couple examples here, Craig. So early on, right, this initiative has been what I would consider disrupting the way that we do social services, particularly with this population. I would argue there's not many organizations doing this kind of work. And part of the lessons learned early on for a lot of our partners, including us, is that, you know, here we are, these individuals that I'm referring to, these participants, right, they are employers of Heart Alliance. So we took a very bold step, right, to say, hey, not only are they going to be participants, but they're going to be employees of ours. And so in doing so, we also take the risk in a number of different things. Now, one thing that I would say behind this is that the men in the program, when they first started, they were impulsive in many cases. They didn't see the end goal. And so so some left for 2 weeks, a month, 2 months, and some left to take another job because another friend saw an effort and like, hey, actually, I got another job for you, and so on. So a couple weeks later, a month later, they come back. Why? Because they got fired. Why did they get fired? Because they couldn't show up on time, because they couldn't sustain the job, they couldn't follow instructions, which is why the kind of behavior therapy is really essential, because what that does is really prepare our men, right, by filtering and talking through some of these real scenarios of how to mitigate some of these challenges. Like, in other words, what triggers an individual to say, F this, or I quit, or I'm going to pick up a gun and shoot this person, right? Like, what triggers that? And the CBT allows individuals to really explore that. And it's in a way where it's done with peers. So each one is kind of building off each other. And there's a lot of research that demonstrates that this is effective. We've done it. There's research that's been done with the BAM program here in Chicago, a mentoring program for young people in high schools and in grammar schools, but also with those who've been in the prison system as well.
So with the few minutes we have left, where does the program go from this point on? You've got the 500 you were aiming for. Does it sustain at 500 and some leave and some come in? And this is transitional employment therapy. Transition to what is the other question?
Well, there's kind of a twofold, right? Transition, one is transition to a safer community, transition to a point in the lives of these men where they don't feel they have to pick up a gun and harm someone else. This is a transition for individuals who are perhaps in some cases more advanced to place them into a full-time employment, a real career pathway. And for those who are still grappling, you know, it's our responsibility and our due, you know, part of our due diligence is to provide them other support systems, whether it's individual therapy or other kind of social services that continues in this pathway of bettering themselves. In terms of what's next, you know, right now we are heavily dependent on the private sector. We have some amazing organizations and some corporations who are financially supporting our program. And it's a very expensive program.
I was going to ask how much it is.
Well, it's expensive in the eyes of some, but I always like saying expensive compared to what? Because I just finished mentioning that on average, it's about $26,000, $27,000 to incarcerate someone with very little to no return of investment, right? And it's actually about more like $37,000, $38,000 if you want to include employee benefits of many of the people who are, you know, prison guards and so on. So it's a lot more expensive to actually incarcerate somebody than to support someone. On average, the cost of a ready participant is between $22,000 and $23,000. But the return of investment, I would say, would be much higher. Right now, the program is being evaluated through the University of Chicago's Crime Lab. You know, we still are about another year and a half or two to see some more of those positive, you know, or results of the program. But anecdotally, I could tell you, Craig, that we see progress in the men, in the lives of these men. We see it in so many ways. We just had a young man in North Lawndale who completed the program. The second day after he just graduated from the program, he was in Nashville, Tennessee, making about $60,000 a year. This is someone who had multiple gun cases, and he's one of the very first people that are being placed. We have somebody now also working, driving forklifts at Wrigley Field and in other companies as well. So we're starting to see some of those positive gains. Now, the challenge is, it doesn't stop there. Those individuals, we designed the program for an additional 6 months of support because we also know that progress is not linear.
Have you had, and just very quickly, have you had any people come back and want to help other people?
Oh, we have plenty of people who are now being inspired to do outreach work or become a crew chief or a coach, case manager, so to speak. We have many of them. And Craig, I would just say this behind that. As we expose them to different jobs, we are expanding their horizons about opportunities and employment opportunities. Many of the men never saw themselves being able to work at the Park District. Many of the men never saw themselves working at a farm. Many of the men never saw themselves doing construction work or outreach work, right? So I strongly believe that the more that we expose them, the more opportunities they would have.
Well, thank you. That's going to be the final word. That is Eddie Bocanegra, the senior director of Ready Chicago, and he's with the Heartland Alliance as well. Thanks for spending this time with us.
Thank you, Craig.
Good to see you again. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.